From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Knighted, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Lydia Simchich, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games. In this episode, we talk with August Brown, platform producer at iRacing, to discuss establishing culture around healthy criticism in game development. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. So let's address Knighted. Lydia, there's a connection with you and our fine returning guest.
Yep. Oh, Carlton, our alma mater. We both went to the same college in Minnesota, although very much not at the same time, sadly.
Yes.
Did not overlap, not even
just about a decade.
If it was a proper decade, we would have overlapped.
That's
reunion,
true.
And that would have been kind of cool, but alas.
All right, enough of that talk. August, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. You're a friend of the show, a friend of ours personally, and I'm excited about this topic. Because it feels very broad and soft skilly, but also it can be very technical and like process driven.
You just described production.
Yeah, oh, I suppose so.
Yeah, but that is why it is so important and why I would die for my producers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything else we want to get to up top before we dive in?
It's hot.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Oh, and I'm old. I don't know.
Oh, yes. Lydia, you turned 30?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yay.
Welcome to old.
Thank you.
It's all right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because you have no other choice.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a positive outlook on it. I like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's dive into it, I suppose.
I guess so. Yeah.
So, August, when you talk about establishing a healthy culture around criticism, what do you mean by that?
Oh, man. Just ripping the lid off the can.
I said, let's start.
Yeah. No, let's do it. I think for me, it's like the more I specifically work in production, I found my job, like every producer approaches their job in different ways. And some people are just like, man, I love Jira. And all I want to do is Jira, and God bless them.
Yeah.
But for me, like I've always gravitated towards like team health as a core focus.
Okay.
And like being a like bridge between different parts of a studio. And at my last job at Studio Cheer, where we made Hotel Infinity, is a very like creative led studio. Like the studio head was the creative director, and like every employee, he found a way, like he was the classic like carpenter with a hammer of like every problem is a nail.
Sure.
Of he was like, oh, I need designers. Well, I'm going to hire 3D modelers and they're going to become designers.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Literally everything is a designer.
Oh.
And so
you're all sighing, but like you can do that.
No,
you can.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. That's, I mean, like, I don't mind that at all.
I was trained as a designer to, my job is in part to enable and to help facilitate other people having a hand in the design process through the lens of their discipline.
Yeah.
That's not the same thing.
Yes.
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
But even then, like, there was bleed over where, like, everyone on the team was expected to do some level of design. Mm-hmm. Some was very practical of, like, get in Unity and make a level. And some of it was just, like, you need to be playing the game and giving design feedback.
Mm. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's more about, like, making sure that people understand the whole process so they can help provide feedback and criticism as needed. Okay.
Yep.
That well, then tellingly, that makes the producer's job of facilitating that culture different from when there are more defined, siloed roles.
Exactly.
Right?
Of you have, in that specific environment, you'd have, like, programmers giving feedback on art because the studio director explicitly, like, everyone needs to give feedback on music. Everyone needs to give feedback on art.
Yeah.
And it was abundantly clear in the beginning, some people were a little better at both giving feedback and also receiving feedback.
Right.
And like those are skills that are like taught. Some people, just like anything, like some people can just pick up a basketball and just like throw it in the basket. Also bless them. Some people just are naturally very good at giving and receiving feedback.
Yeah.
And I think most people, it's a skill they need to practice.
Yeah.
Well, it's also it then goes through an additional lens or filter with communication style because you can very earnestly give good feedback and respect the work of another person. But if you're the way that you communicate that and the way that they communicate in general, if that doesn't match, it can then like the interference of that can completely negate the actual good in feedback and well-intentioned behind it.
Right.
And that's a problem too.
Totally.
And that's a very different problem as well. It kind of sucks too, because you both come in being like, I like this and I want to help, and it just isn't landing at all, you know?
Totally.
Yeah, talking past one another and such. So what does healthy criticism look like?
So I think there are, the way I think about it, there's kind of like two layers of like giving or receiving feedback, and two things specifically that like make it kind of difficult, especially in games. And one of them is people being able to like just being good at giving feedback, like being able to say like this thing is good or this thing is like not as good.
Yeah.
And being able to like be productive with that feedback.
Sure.
I think the like best single thing we could do for, this is my soapbox on feedback, we should make every single person employed in the games industry take a figure drawing class.
Elaborate.
Because a core part of figure drawing, you have to draw, but like the big thing is you get everyone in a room and you rip each other's drawings apart.
Oh,
interesting.
You have to do like group sessions of giving feedback and breaking down each other's art. And it's... drawing 101 is brutal because a lot of people aren't used to it. And it's like, hey, his head is the wrong size. And the initial like response from 90% of people of like, go to hell. It's not. That's what I meant to do.
Yeah.
I wanted his head to be huge.
But also the reason why that would be figure drawing class as opposed to any other class with a peer review component is because all of the art you're generating comes from the same source.
Yep.
Right. And so it is, you are looking at everybody is looking at the same thing. So you have like an objectivity of what are you looking at, as opposed to an art class where you all are making stuff and peer reviewing it, but everyone's making something different.
Yep.
Yeah. That becomes a lot.
So there's that
as
common
well
basis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
And also, I think it's important for it to be art, because at the end of the day, even if you're a programmer or whatnot, it's still a creative expression.
Yes.
I would hate that so much. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'd do it, I guess, if somebody made me. But I hate drawings. Because whenever I want, if the head was big, I'd be like, I didn't mean for the head to be big.
Yeah.
And so it'd be annoying.
Yeah.
So that's good. August is nodding his head. Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, that's the point of it, is getting people used to take down that shell of... being able to accept criticism.
Sure.
Like, you need to be in a, like, open space to be able to accept it and say, like, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
And my work isn't perfect, and it's okay if it's not perfect.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And your goal isn't necessarily, at least in this exercise,
right,
to then take that feedback and then make it perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's to take that feedback and understand it and develop a, insofar that you can, like, a more objective view of your own work.
Sure.
Yeah.
And this kind of bleeds into like the second facet of criticism in my eyes, which is like the psychological safety element of like, you need to be in a safe space to receive criticism.
Absolutely.
And I think by the nature of the industry, most people aren't.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of jobs, like a lot of people are coming into any new job with a lot of baggage because this industry kind of sucks. And so when you say like, hey, that head is a little big, what the person's hearing is, oh God, how am I going to afford health insurance?
Yeah.
There's also, I think, also a reality of the industry. At least I've also found I hit the point where it's like, okay, we get all this feedback. That's valid. We can't fix it.
Yep.
We have no time.
Right.
We have no time. We have no money. And so, you know, it you just get feedback on something and you can't do anything with it. And that sucks in a very different reason, but it also then adds to that feeling of, well, we started off making a bad product. We had to be perfect as close as possible to the beginning as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess that distinguishes that sense of process reality. Like, okay, now we all know what the problem is, and now we can assess what to do to fix it. And that's outside the scope of this topic, I imagine.
Yeah.
But like in the case where we can't fix this, we can only patch it or make it a little better or hide it a little bit. That distinguishes that type of criticism from media critique from critics or player feedback, because they're what they want out of it or the result of that criticism is very different.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We want, as developers, we want to make a successful product based off of the goals that we set out for the product. So I kind of hate calling games products, but I have been doing that more regularly because it makes it feel more businessy than I want it to be.
Welcome to capitalism.
Uh-huh.
Well, <They got me. laughs> if it helps, you can also think of it in terms of a project.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, you have a budget, which is money, but also time, and also interest is maybe the wrong word.
Yeah.
But like, what amount of energy are you going to give to it? And now in capitalism, that means dollars per hour or whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it could also, on a personal project, you can still think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
And not feel like it's a, it's not, I think when people take production advice or processes and they think of it only in terms of capitalism and products, then that means they don't learn its lessons in places in their work or their hobbies where it could be benefit them as well.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is valuable. It's just, I cringe at the businessy aspect of it, Stephen Business says.
I do want to go back to the idea to psychological safety and also how one walks into the room, because I found that there's kind of two levels of responsibility almost. There's the individual responsibility of how do I show up to this and prepare myself to receive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the safety of the culture of the group. And how it will be done and enacted and then used. So how do you work with building that in, both individual to individual, and making sure as a whole culture it is safe and productive?
So I think it'd be easiest for me to start with the second question, which is, I think it is, like, people talk about, like, work culture, I think, usually in fairly ephemeral, useless ways.
Yes.
Sure.
But I think this is one of the ways that, like, culture can really exist in a tangible way, is how a culture deals with criticism. And I think the most important, like, practical thing I walked away with this is that you need to model it. Like, if you expect people to give and receive criticism in, like, good ways, you can't just expect, like, your entry-level artists to get criticism, but, like, hey, don't say anything bad about the CEO unless you're in a closed room.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's the easiest way for people to, like, let down those emotional safety barriers and, like, feel safe in a place of, like, well, if the CEO is getting torn to shreds in the review meetings, like, I should be fine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
How do you feel about that in, like, how can you deal with what is inevitably also true, which is that people who are at senior levels or who are closer to the vision of a project actually are less likely to either get as much criticism that is then enacted by the group? So if someone who's a vision holder, whether they're the creative director or the game, you know, chief game designer, whatever it is, and they get critique and then they like, okay, I've taken it in and I'm not going to make any changes because they have that hierarchical control.
Totally.
Or
how do you whereas the low-level artist who maybe doesn't understand the project as well and needs to be instructed more on what to do, they're going to get more of that feedback,
right?
And this is, of course, in a perfect environment.
Can
you still model that in a way without it feeling really artificial?
Because
I think people can sometimes feel like them being told that's how we do things here, but not actually seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
That also fits in with safety as well, because it's like, even if you are a senior person, you welcome criticism, it doesn't feel safe to criticize the person who is going to ultimately decide if you're still at the company.
Yeah, right. Totally.
Yeah.
I think the way that I have gone around this most successfully for me personally is, this kind of goes into another facet of production that I feel very strong about, which is how do you create a culture where everyone feels heard, but is almost always told no.
Mm.
Oh.
Because it's really tough.
Yeah.
Because eventually at a certain point, you keep like pitching ideas and you keep hearing no. I'm like, well, why am I wasting this energy?
Yeah.
And I think there are practical things you can do to continue to pitch ideas or whatever, pitch criticism. And then be told no in a way that you still feel heard, in which way that encourages you to still do it. So I think that answers your question of, like, if people are still asking questions and leadership is still publicly saying no to these things in a very healthy way, then it makes it feel more transparent to me.
Yeah. The what I'm kind of getting from that is it sounds like it's important to be clear about reasoning why something isn't working.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Like, so, like, you don't just say, no, we can't do this thing. you have to be like, no, we can't do this thing. It's not in the budget. No, we can't do this thing. It's going to take too long. No, we can't do this thing. We don't have the people to do it. Something like that.
Or even just like, it doesn't follow my vision.
Yeah, that works too.
As opposed to because I'm the boss.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which is those are it's easy to conflate those two things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Or like, I love this. I don't think it fits for this game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally.
Mark uses that all the time.
I use it all the time.
It's
every idea is good, is what I tell
people. Yeah, you do.
Every single one. Even the bad ones.
And I feel good when you say that. I'm like, wait.
But almost none of them fit what you're going for.
Yeah. It's good.
Totally.
It's good.
Yeah, whatever rhetorical devices you use to get to that, that almost always saying no, that's a really good way to phrase it.
I think, the core part of it, I think, is that it all has to be public.
Yes.
Like, I am very much a, like, DM. You should be able to click a box in Slack that says you can't use DMs in the Slack. I think teams would be a lot more healthy if that were enforced.
I do kind of find it a little frustrating when somebody, like, will DM me a specific thing about the game and not just say it in public. Because, like, sometimes I want other people to understand that this isn't working for this person, and other people might agree or disagree, and then we can have a conversation about it. And I imagine, you know, it slows down the process if you just want it to get done. But if you want it to get done right, like, that has to be part of that process.
This kind of gets back to the safety element, where, like, the smaller group is, the more safe it feels. And on the flip side, like, the example I gave earlier, where, like, don't criticize the CEO in public, is also, like, a perversion of safety, of, like, the CEO, like, being put in this artificial place of safety. But I feel like the more you force conversations out in the open, the more you force people to, like, say no and have hard conversations. And the more important thing is, I think it's kind of helpful for those two people.
Yeah.
I think it's infinitely helpful for everyone else on the team to see, like, oh, someone can question George. Yeah. I didn't know you could question George.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I guess it's up to sort of a level of team trust that that doesn't devolve into, all right, everybody, let's all question George.
Yeah, you don't want a dogpile on.
Yeah, totally.
So fun.
Yeah. But yeah, if you have a quote-unquote private conversation just in a topic channel that everyone can see and chime in if they want, almost nobody will, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That's still a private message.
Yeah. Yep.
Insofar as in its efficiency. It's like, the two of us need to talk about this thing. Mm-hmm. You all can eavesdrop if you like.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, even in the situation when you do have, like, a DM and something, I think it's still important to bring it up. Maybe not call out a person, but just, like, bring it up in another meeting or something in a public space to be like, I was having a conversation with someone on this, and this is making a lot of sense. Maybe we should go in this direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of perfect for stand up, that kind of venue where it's like, oh, hey, we were talking about this, or something in the coming sprint, or a group sync about that particular feature in your department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then what do you do then if you end up getting this instances where there just become too many voices on something? Like, because something can't be resolved, or there's a disagreement, and so you invite everybody in, and now it's just this big cloudy choice.
Yeah.
And then someone needs to actually come in and decide in a way. Like, what is the process of that in a way that doesn't make sure that everybody feels heard, but also isn't spending lots of work days addressing each individual's need to be heard when everybody has
a say. Yeah, I felt like I had this issue when I was working at Future Club, because, like, we were a co-op, and so everybody felt... I mean, it was important. We did kind of establish that culture that everybody could talk about things, but it also meant that everybody had input, and sometimes it felt like somebody should just be the lead and say, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, like, there needed to be a designated, all said and told, if we hit an impasse, this is the person who decides.
Yep.
Yeah,
how do
you set that up?
Yeah, I don't think there's any room for democracy in a workplace. Like, okay, I don't think it's efficient.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, like, I think at the end of the day, you need someone designated to make a decision, and this needs to be public. This can't just be like, oh, we'll, like, go with whatever George says. Mm. It's like, no, George is the decision maker on this thing. And George has the ability to designate someone else the decision maker. If he's like, I don't have time to do the art review for these assets.
Yeah.
Steven, he's in charge of art review now for these assets.
What?
and now you're the decision maker.
Sure.
But, like, all that information is painfully public of, like, who the decision maker is. And that's why I think this is the core of how you make everyone feel heard, is, like, knowing if it comes up to a vote, and you just lose the vote, there, that feels so unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, I didn't like argue my case enough. I could have gotten like someone else on my side. Like, Mark, why did you vote against me? It's just awful.
Yeah, yeah.
But like if George, the hypothetical director, comes in and just says, we're going with option A. I hear the people who like want option B. We can't do it because of XYZ. And then it's done. Like the decision is made. We're not talking about it anymore, and we're moving on to the next thing.
And that's that person has decided ahead of when you are having the conversation of the decision.
Yeah.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
Or in reaction, like you want everyone to still feel heard, like if they're making decisions independent of the conversation.
I mean, like going into a conversation where you know you're going to bring up a bunch of options, everyone has a sense of, if we hit an impasse, this is the person who who will be the one who breaks the tie and makes the decision, as opposed to getting to that point where they need a decision and going, we need someone to make a decision, looking around at each other.
Oh, no, no. Like, this is, at my last studio, I think this is one of the things we did really well, which is Will, who is our creative director, was the de facto decision maker on everything.
Okay.
And he could delegate that responsibility to anyone for any specific thing. But at the end of the day, if Will said, like, that button is red, then the button's red, and we're moving on.
Yeah. And every decision needs to flow from that rather than future decisions fighting that previous decision.
Yes.
Yep. This is one of the things I tell people a lot, which is like, like how to lose an argument.
Yeah.
It, which is like, you just need to live in the world where you lost that argument, and like then your future creative contributions needs to be part of the world where you lost that argument.
Yeah.
It can't be part of the world where you're still wishing you won that argument.
Yeah.
And so, and that's a hard thing to do. Yes. But it means that if you're in a situation where you have a decision maker and it's pretty obvious, even though you didn't take a vote, that almost everyone disagrees, like you need to be able to have an environment where if everyone's overruled because there's a boss, that people can still move forward in the world where they all lost that argument.
Right.
And like that, and then that can be healthy.
Yep.
And I imagine that's a matter of just setting boundaries and like anything, practice. Or is, because I imagine there are some teams which are more formal about the decision making process. Like, we're going to talk about it at this meeting and not outside this meeting, or we're going to talk about it until Thursday in an unstructured way, or I'm going to hear from each of you or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
And then there's some teams that probably are just, once I hear enough, I'll decide.
Yep.
And that could maybe a little bit looser. That can work for some, for others. Have you found that there's any particular process that works maybe best for most teams? Or is it really just every team has to find their way to how that works?
I think it's really every team needs to find their way.
Okay.
I think every team works best the way that team works best. And I feel like in an effort to make process more accessible to people, we gave frameworks like Agile and Scrum and like whatever, and it's really meant to be like a starting place and more people take it as prescription like, I think fewer people should do sprints. Like, I think fewer people should do a lot of things that we just assume is like the best practice because their team doesn't work well with that. And so this goes back to feedback too, of like, you just really need to figure things out, and the sooner you can make tough decisions and say like, I know we're supposed to do this, but I don't want to, and I don't think it's like a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I think more teams will find a way. Like, I think you need one game project with the team to figure out like what your actual like working process is that works at least. And so I would love to be able to give a like general, like, just do this. But I think every team is just so different.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
It feels a little like a catch 22 in that you want to establish a culture that everyone feels included in, and everyone feels like they can provide feedback. But you also want to establish a culture that gets things done and making sure that like the direction stays towards finishing what you're making. And somebody needs to be at the head of that.
Yep.
Which means that this person's input is the more valuable input in that way. Does that make sense? Not that it's literally the more valuable input, but in that, like, they're the one who ultimately makes the decision. They're hearing everyone's feedback.
Yep.
But I can imagine a situation where you've been giving good feedback and your boss is agreeing with you and is like, this makes sense. But also, we have all these other concerns. And eventually, you start feeling not jaded, but like maybe discouraged.
Yeah.
And even if you feel hurt, it doesn't feel good to constantly be shot down, regardless of the reasoning for it. Even if you know why.
I think for me, like, I had an epiphany at my last studio specifically around this point,
sure,
where
okay.
I felt like I was throwing out tons of ideas because they were welcome, if not, like, required.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told no so often. And I hit that impasse of, like, why do I even, like, why am I doing all this?
Right.
And in the game Hotel Infinity, you are a guest at a weird, like, impossible space hotel. And you start in this black space and you get a key and you get a briefcase and then you go into a lobby and then you have to like find your way to your room and then a bunch of stuff happens after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, take a pause. It's an incredible experience.
Ah, thank you.
It's one of the best VR games I've played in ages.
Yeah. It won a DICE award.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice. Good.
Yeah. So go pick it up. It's on Meta and PlayStation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Advertisement over. Continue.
Thank you. We had this point where, like, okay, the player's in the lobby. How do we get them to their hotel room?
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't they have a briefcase? Hmm. And it was this small idea. I just threw out in a meeting. And I actually chatted with my creative director, like, 2 weeks ago, just on a, like, friends having chat call.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, remember the briefcase was my idea. He's like, I have no... It's a core part of the game.
Yeah.
Like, that briefcase is, like, the thing that keeps you, like, going throughout the whole game. He's like, oh, that was you? And it wasn't important to me that anyone knew that I did that. I just know at the end of the day, when any player plays that game, that core bit that's, like, so important to it came from me.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so even though I wasn't, like, publicly lauded for, like, this great idea and I didn't get a medal I think I deserved.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I saw the fruits of my labor in that game.
Okay.
Right.
So I
right.
didn't... Being heard can mean so many things.
Sure.
It doesn't necessarily mean, like, everyone stands up and applauds you.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And I think that, like, that speaks to the holistic way that games are developed. Like, not everything that you do is going to be in the game, mm-hmm. but it is part of the process that creates the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes difficult for the public to acknowledge that, but if you as a person are aware of that contribution, then that makes it valuable.
Yeah, totally.
And mm-hmm. as far as modeling goes, that's also a very easy and good way to foster that, to show that. So, like, specifically saying in, you know, venues or in meetings or wherever, you know, retrospective, stand-up, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this person had this really cool idea.
Yeah.
And I went and rolled with it. Or I was talking to this person and we were brainstorming this, specifically calling out by name. Or even in build notes, I've also just lauded the work that, and little, like, the human touches of where people's fingerprints were in certain features in each build. Doing that by name is a way that you can show, hey, I heard this person and they are a part of it, even of this process.
Yeah.
Whether it's within their department or working outside of their department, as a rubber duck or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's also something very valuable when I originally was thinking about this, especially in terms of the fact that a lot of times women and people of color, they get their ideas stolen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or, like, you know, they say it and then someone else remembers that, like, it differently and thinks that they came up with it,
yeah,
et cetera. But explicitly calling out that person's name and saying this person had a cool idea is also a way to foster that by showing.
Yep.
And telling.
I think a lesson for creative directors too is I've found this on collaborative projects where I will, when there's someone's idea that I loved and we incorporate, I will make an effort to, when I talk about it, remember, like, my memory of the idea becomes tied to the how it was given.
Yeah.
Because then it's easier to remember to give people their flowers,
yes.
But also it's very helpful because then I remember why I liked it.
Yeah.
Oh,
which is different from my own ideas,
yeah.
Which, like, I can change those whenever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, but when it's something that was part of a process or was brought to me and clicked, then it's actually easier for me, and then that actually helps the stability of the project.
Yeah,
in a way.
Oh.
So it's almost a selfish desire,
especially if it came from when you were working on some other system or thing.
Yeah,
and because so often other ideas have to play with those, you find conflict between those things when you're trying to add stuff. But if one is begot from the other, then you remember, oh, that's why this worked.
And if it was against my own instinct, then I have to protect against that instinct from taking back over down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are hard skills to do. But I think there's multiple reasons why you should, you know, have that collaborative environment. I could also see a team culture, which is very much like best idea wins, ownership evaporates.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little more dangerous, but it can be healthy.
Yeah.
Particularly And at the same time, I think this process is important to know that if you're in an environment where you're getting no a lot and it's a good environment, but you're feeling like, why isn't any yes? You know, there's a version of Hotel Infinity August where you didn't get that idea mm-hmm. in. And that I would say that would have been probably worse for your creative satisfaction on it. Even if the game wouldn't have been worse, right?
There are like dozens of things like the suitcase from
Yeah. Sure. No, but what I mean to say is that adopting this process and having this culture does not guarantee that you will get your ideas.
Oh, totally.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? And I think it's important for people to, in all, I mean, we talked about this recently with like when you're doing pitches or you're selling, you feel like I did all the things right.
Yes.
Why, you know, why am I not getting rewarded?
Yeah.
And it's because it's not always down to that. Those are, almost just a minimum requirement.
Right. That's what I was, that's what I was saying.
To be possible.
I think it's important for that process to be acknowledged as well as just the end result.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
like you getting nose on things leads towards, you know, the fork, you go on the other fork in the road or whatever, and that's the path that you're taking. Mm-hmm. But like you blocked off that other path because you know that that path didn't work out. Right. Yep. That's an important part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's difficult to recognize even after the fact that, like, you know, you did that. I was the one who said this was, or I thought this was a good idea and everybody said it was no. And we went in a different direction and the game is much better for it. But I came up with this bad idea.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can decide like your value to a team, right? Because you can be like, oh, like all my brilliant ideas, none of them got made, but like I worked on it, it was all great.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could be, I mean, you can really come out of a situation and say like, you know, this the management or the leadership, creative leadership, or they didn't like my ideas, and I think the game would have been better if we did it, but it was a good working experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think I'm gonna move on.
Yeah, like, yeah, totally.
It gives you more a better understanding of what is valuable to you in your creative life,
right?
And you could be like, you know what, I'm in this environment where they're just constantly asking me to give ideas, mm-hmm. and I don't want to.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because they're just gonna say no, and I actually don't really want to have many ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. well, then maybe that's not the environment for you.
Right.
Totally.
I think that's a part of when people talk about culture.
Yes.
Yeah. People will often just get that down to like how many ping pong tables do we have in the break room?
Yep.
Like to make people feel happy,
right.
or whatever. But like a lot of it is about fit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Totally. I think that is a thing. I explicitly think that a good like creative director should solve kind of at the hiring process saying like, how do you do it with criticism? Like, this is what criticism at the studio looks like.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I wanted to jump back just like a half second of, I think a really powerful thing that Lydia said is like the power of using names.
Yeah.
Where even if your ideas aren't used, if people as like a culture get in the habit of using names of like, if Mark throws an idea and that gets shot down for whatever reason.
Yeah.
If there's such a monumental difference between me as the next person, like their own idea, like, oh, why don't we do X? Or versus like, oh, I really like Mark's idea.
Yeah.
But it made me think of this direction. How about we do this? And so like, I basically get Mark onto the idea train. Like,
right, right.
It puts you in the passenger
seat. It validates the contribution.
Yes.
Even if that particular thing doesn't end up in the final product,
right.
It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That's a great way of acknowledging it.
I will also very frequently like point out, oh, this person pointed out this problem on my idea.
Yeah.
And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. Essentially to cite sources, but also to point out like their contribution is valuable, even if and especially it saved me from making a bad decision.
Yep, totally.
I have a random question and a circle back to previous thing. One random question. Have you read the book No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotions at Work?
I have not.
It is very good. I highly recommend it. And it talks a lot about this sort of thing, the idea of people are emotional beings, and we have been told that we need to not have emotions at work, but that is, one, impossible, and two, actually very not great for the work process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For a lot of the reasons that we've discussed here,
right?
The idea of culture, but then also the fact that it changes how you present and how you work.
Mm-hmm.
Good book, recommend. It has a cute cover, which is originally why I bought it, honestly. But it's a very good book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, Lydia, you're 30 now.
Yeah.
You need to start getting...
Wait a minute. You were too upbeat about that.
That's okay.
Lydia's been very excited about being 30. And honestly, I kind of appreciate that energy. Because when I was 30, I was like, oh, no.
That's the... I mean, it's been a long time since I turned 30.
Yeah.
So my barometer is your attitude.
Yeah, that's
fair.
It was
really sour.
Oh.
Yeah.
I try to live
just like, not familiar to me.
I try to live with mentality that my grandmother had when she turned 40.
Yeah,
because I think it's healthy.
Yeah, no, so it's much more healthy. I'm still depressed. Anyway,
you know what would fix that depression?
What would that be?
Capitalism.
Amazing. Okay, I'll go to nicegames.club/merch and buy myself a pillow.
Yeah, it would be a great birthday present to me if you all got yourself a little treat. And there's plenty of little treats that you can find on nicegames.club/merch, like...
You can purchase our board game, Glom.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. You can also get a t-shirt with our logo on it, which is cool.
You could get a pillow to cry into and feel better afterwards.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that advice.
Sometimes you just need a good cry.
Yeah.
All of that available. I mean, all of the things. The rest of it is up to you. Nicegames.club/merch. I'm imagining three types of feedback scenarios.
Okay.
One is, here's an idea. I've looked at what we're doing. Here's an idea.
Yep.
We talked a little, that's kind of the framework we've been sort of discussing a little bit.
Yep.
Although I think all that applies to other types of things. Then there's, I found a problem with something in the game. And either here's how to fix it or just here's what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, someone's made a decision that I don't like.
Sure.
And are those, and I imagine there are more.
Yeah.
But like, that's the three categories I can think of that all that sort of feedback generally would fall into.
Yep.
Is there any difference between those in terms of how you handle those either in a hierarchy or within a group? Or is it really just all the flavors of the same kind of?
Yeah, I think it just boils down to criticism. Like, yeah. They're all just criticism at its core. And yeah. So I think this gets to kind of the last part of you accidentally segued into.
Oh, no.
Sorry. You fell into my trap. Ah. No, the final part of, like, I think it all kind of comes from the same place. Mm. And the final way I think about, like, safety, emotional safety, yeah. is separating the work from the person.
Yes.
Mm. Of, like, if you are told no, or, like, if you're an artist and you're constantly asked for revisions. Of, yeah. Like, this head is too big. The head's still too big. Eventually.
It's still too big.
That's going to leak into your own vision of yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And be like, oh, they think I'm a bad artist.
Is my right? head too big?
Yes.
In more ways than one, right?
Yes. And so, like, I think, and that also, that doesn't just, I think we kind of naturally apply this to, like, entry-level artists or, like, whoever, because those feel like the people who are getting the most criticism. In some way, that's true. But also, I think that should be applying to, like, creative directors just as equally. Like, I know I've worked with creative directors before who have gotten a lot of criticism, and in closed doors, they're like, am I bad at this? Like, am I bad creative directors? Like, no, you're just getting challenged a lot. Those are different things.
Yeah.
Like, you're throwing out ideas that are being challenged. And, like, maybe you are a bad creative director. I can't tell you. But, like, I think part of the psychological safety is finding a way to reinforce of, like, hey, we think you're awesome.
Yeah.
We think you're really good at this, and we're glad you're on your team. That picture sucks.
Yeah.
We know you're better than that drawing. We know you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that one's not good.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's really hard to hear, because going back to the, like, am I losing my job part of safety? Of, like, if I hear that picture sucks, am I like, well, time to polish up the resume?
Yeah.
How do you tell people that in a way that they believe it and doesn't just feel like you just set, you know, just trying to, like, I'm setting the tone that everyone's cool,
right?
But I hate this thing.
What's it, the compliment sandwich? Or
yeah.
That thing.
Yeah. I interviewed for a job once where the person told me, we do the compliment sandwich here. And I'm like, you know that you're not supposed to tell me that.
That is pretty great.
So how do you prevent that sense of artificiality and make it real?
Yeah.
But then separate from that, almost on the other side, what if it, like, it really do kind of suck and maybe they need to go? Like, how do you, if you're sort of reflexively trying to create a positive environment and normally when you're trying to give a critique, you don't want them to feel that, but what if you do want them to feel that?
Yeah. Mm. I think I would challenge your wording a little there. Okay. I don't think we should try to build a positive environment.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we should try to build a transparent environment.
Ah, okay.
And I think if everything is firing on all cylinders, it happens to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think both of your flip sides are answered by the same question of like that in a healthy culture, as I've like experienced it myself, if someone is screwing up, they will be told they're screwing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that they can always check in with whoever their manager is and be like, hey, I'm getting a lot of criticism. How am I standing in this company? And a good manager should be able to say, like, you're doing great.
Yeah.
Or I know you're getting a lot of flack lately, but like, this is a really challenging thing to nail. And like, that's why we gave it to you and you're doing a good job. You're going to be told no a lot.
Right.
Yeah. And to know, like, in the back of your mind, and this also comes from the openness of like seeing it happen to other people where appropriate, of course, of like, if someone is doing a bad job, that like they are told proactively of like, hey, I feel like stuff is kind of slipping on your side.
Mm.
We're noticing and like we want to support you and like get you back to a better place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that they need to know that that conversation will come if it's actually slipping and that you won't, especially I feel like being Midwestern game developers, like,
yeah,
that they won't, like, Steven. You think those heads are a little big, don't you?
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah. You just need to set aside all passive aggression.
Right,
just know that, like, oh, if I'm screwing up, I know that someone will tell me.
Yes. Right, right.
And I don't have to try to read between the lines.
Right, because you're the one doing it. It's difficult sometimes for you to pull back and recognize that, like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Or it is working, you know? Like, it, yeah. That's what the criticism's for.
Right. Yeah, and I think, like, once you're able to get through that, like, final phase of, like, open, awesome criticism, it does, like, open a new door creatively and working collaboratively because, like, kind of going to a point that Mark said much earlier of, like, there's no bad idea. I'm like, there is bad art. Like, there are bad ideas. And, like, I think being – it's – you have to be in, like, such a incredibly safe space to be able to tell someone their idea is bad or doesn't fit for this or, like, their code is bad or the way they are engineer this is bad. And I feel like in a race for positivity, it might just be, like, a millennial thing. I don't know. But, like – that there is no bad thing. Like, no, I've done art that's bad.
Yeah.
Like, I know for a fact I make lots of things that are bad, and I think they're good at the time. And I feel like my best friends are the ones who can say, like, hey, August, that's not it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, getting to that place is really hard, but I think ultimately if you can, like, you just make a better product and you're happier.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
Can we expand and go a little deeper into the, like, I know that you can do better and you're doing like you're doing fine. You're just being told no. How do you both for yourself and also helping with others when you have that conversation get to the point where you are reconnected with essentially your skills and your tools? So that way you know kind of how to then address all of the no's. What I'm this is it's a hard for me to phrase it, but essentially like. If you're being told no a lot or you feel like you're unsure of where you're standing and you're told no, you're killing it, it's great, but you don't actually know why or how, that's also deeply unproductive because you don't know what you're doing right. How are you going to repeat that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you know that the heads are the right size, but you don't know that they are the right size, how are you going to know to keep drawing the heads that way?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have those conversations that don't just gloss over, but actually reconnect to the thing about the person as a creative person or as a programmer or whomever they are, so that way then they have the sense that they can go forward and know how to do that?
Yeah, I think the ultimate answer to this is that the person like doing that work and whatnot is putting an incredible amount of labor into that work. And that labor needs to be met by whoever is criticizing it.
Yeah.
And giving feedback. It's not good enough just to say like, hey, this is bad. Try again.
Right.
Yeah.
And like for someone, this is why I think delegation is so incredibly important. And like that decision making hierarchy is you'll get someone who is overloaded, but wants to make all the decisions and they need someone to step in and say like, hey, you're not doing a service to the team. People need more than you're able to give.
Yeah.
So either you need to like decide it's that important to you and work nights and weekends, or you need to delegate.
Yeah.
And like, that's a decision you can make. But like, I think we kind of gloss over the labor that is necessary to give good feedback.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I'm getting from this last bit of the show is the separating the critique process from the rest of the process of team building. So
sure.
someone's getting a lot of critique because they're going out on a limb more often. Mm-hmm. Someone's getting a lot of critique because they're actually struggling.
Yeah.
Someone's getting a lot of critique because they actually just have a different idea than everybody else. They're kind of continually fighting for that to sort of steer that battleship. Some people are not getting a lot of critique because they're just not offering. They're just heads down. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, so whether you're getting a lot or you're getting set, if no is being said a lot to you, or maybe yes is being said a lot to you because before you go out on that limb, you spend way too much labor trying to make sure that everyone's going to say yes.
Yeah.
Mm. And so there isn't actually very, indicative of any particular thing. Mm. And so it can't be a proxy for other stuff.
I think that's really, I've never thought about this before, but this is 100% right of like, in the same way that hearing no a lot isn't a indicator that you're doing a bad job.
Yeah.
Being told yes a lot isn't an indicator that you're doing a good job.
Right.
Yeah. True.
And I think we conflate that a lot. Mm-hmm. Like on one project, we had an artist who we were like, oh, make random models for like things that would be in a room. Mm-hmm. And so like he comes to us with this beautifully rendered power socket. It's like...
Yeah,
2,000 tries, like every little facet in there, like all the edges are beautifully beveled.
Yeah,
we're like, it's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
No player will ever see this. We could have had like 50 things that are useful in the game instead of this one beautiful electric socket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, even though that electric socket passed crit with flying colors,
yeah,
that doesn't mean he was doing a great job.
Right,
right, right, right, right. And that, I guess, that expands the idea of an environment of healthy criticism outside of like the work. Right.
Yep. Totally.
It's the how are you spending your time? How are you meeting the brief? How are you responding to messages?
Yeah,
that those are all things that in a work environment are open to critique. And if you have a healthy creative critical environment, it sounds like you can also expand that out. I mean, all of those things people have different feelings and emotional realities to. Like, you may be really comfortable being like told that your art is bad
because
you've like built an emotional framework to process that, but then suddenly you're being told that, like, oh, actually, you talk too much in meetings.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like that's a different kind of. That's you have to start that process over, to get comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I think this is in the modeling department. Mm. This is actually something I tried. I've always been like open to criticizing leadership publicly for my companies, but I think like aside from. Even if you think they're doing a good job, it's important to be like, hey, Will, I think, or whoever. Just think,
not as an example or anything.
it's just who, it's the name that falls like naturally into my parlance when I'm like giving feedback to someone. But Will's great. But like, hey, I think you're too harsh there. And like, as long as people can see that, I'm like, oh, okay. Like everyone, no one's immune from criticism. And like, you're saying, Mark, like every part of the job is part of your job and not just coding, not just programming, but like being a decent human in meetings.
Right. That's a, I mean, and it kind of leans back to what you were talking about earlier, Mark, in that like these are kind of soft skills that aren't taught as frequently. And I guess I'll have to take that figure drawing class to get better.
No, I think everyone should. Also, figure drawing's fun.
I
disagree.
I've done figure drawing, but we never did like class critiques.
You didn't do crits?
I was in high school. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't take any art in college.
Gotcha.
That was 2D art.
Yeah.
But we did figure drawing. It was fun. I liked it.
Okay. I've never done figure drawing, admittedly. I just don't like drawing in general because it never looks like what I have in my head.
Yes, the part reason
if
why
only practice exists.
Yeah, and then people could tell you all the reasons why.
What's also nice about figure drawing is that the model does have to move occasionally, so you only have a limited amount of time to do the thing, which is kind of freeing because it's like, well, I only had so much time before they had to move.
Yeah, but an innate excuse as to why it's bad.
Well, with a still life, it's like I could spend 10 hours because it won't move. It must be perfect.
Sure, yeah.
No, eventually, the flowers do wilt.
That's why you can fake flowers for the art studio, or at least that's what we did.
Yeah, yeah.
Total aside, but I was on the Star Trek cruise recently. And stay tuned for how this connects. Noelle Wells, the actor who plays Tendi on Star Trek Lower Decks, she did a shoe drawing class on the boat.
Okay.
Where everyone took off their shoes.
Oh.
And just and like with a limited amount of time, everyone had 2 minutes to just sketch their shoes. Mm. And then she would go and give feedback. And it was not quite a full like workshop. It was mostly sort of just everyone telling everyone did a great job.
Yeah, sure.
Because it wasn't meant to be sort of professionally framed. But yeah. I ended up getting way more out of that than I thought I would.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
I was like, it'll be fun, an art activity on this thing. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
But no, it was really good. It sort of, I adopted a different method of drawing than I normally do. Mm-hmm. It was good to get people to hear everyone else talk about like where they struggle, and everyone being really self-critical because it was such an artificial environment.
Sure.
That like no one had any pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was just really easy to be, even in a situation where like everyone was trying to like spare each other's feelings because it wasn't a serious thing. Mm-hmm. Even that. So I could see like even that very limited version of that kind of thing can be very beneficial for teams.
Sure.
Yeah. Like as an exercise. Because yeah, I just expected to have kind of a good time, and it was a little bit eye opening.
But also what you notice, I think, is another thing, I guess, that I've kind of found in as I've gotten acquainted with my team is like, oh, I know now that this person usually has a lot of good thoughts about this particular thing. Mm-hmm. And so now if like I even in Jira for future tickets where I will have to do some design work, I'll call out like if this person is available, I want them to be readily like allocated to help me with this or to rubber duck with this.
Yeah.
Because like they have good thoughts and they know more about this than I would.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so like with your shoe drawing class, you know, you may find someone who just really gravitates to the laces first and does a pretty good job or at least has an eye for laces. And then you now know, hey, I need some good feedback on laces. You go to that guy.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I guess that's part of, I mean, getting away from the figure drawing example. I mean, a culture of criticism can really help people understand each other.
Yeah. Totally.
Right. Not just their weaknesses.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think like all of this stuff, these are all skills that are built up. And even like if you're like, I don't want to give ideas, like I just want to be heads down. I think in the same way that like Steven doesn't want to draw.
Yeah.
Because he's never really tried it.
That's not true. I have tried it. I just don't like it.
Okay. I think people think the same thing about like giving ideas.
Yeah, that's
right. So like I think to your idea or your point is like one thing I love doing is making sure like during retros and whatnot, making sure you're calling out feedback from people who are quiet.
Yeah.
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 Because like soliciting that, like putting them on the spot, they're going to feel uncomfortable. But as long as you reinforce all those psychological safety things of like, hey, if you don't have a thought right away, we'll be like, oh, okay, we'll come back to you in a minute. You can think about it.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
And like build up that skill within them of like being good at like giving back feedback. Like you're going to find people who just like have an eye for laces or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in the same vein, like oftentimes people will speak up if they're really passionate about this specific thing. If they're like, this is the wrong decision or this is great. Keep doing it. Yeah. You know, like, and so like, I think it can be problematic to be like, hey, you haven't said anything in a while. What do you think?
And, they
might not have strong opinions about where they're going.
I actually really like using alphabetical order because I'm remote, so we don't have a room to sit around. We can't like go clockwise or anything.
Sure.
But I like going either from top to bottom or bottom to top, depending on the day, alphabetical order, because then people know, okay, I'm up after this person.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're quiet, you have a chance to prepare what you want to say. But then also if you are a talkative person, you know when your turn is going to be.
Yeah.
And that and then you don't have the like talkative people always go first and then you're picking on the quiet people dynamic.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that they're going to have a space, that they have to have a space, and they can prepare for that space.
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose also there are values to give everyone a framework where everyone is treated the same.
Yes.
But also you've sort of identified that sometimes you want to make sure that there are, if someone is like really good at processing things, you don't need to encourage them as much.
Yeah.
And if some people are having more difficulty with it, you need to sort of make their environment a little more comfortable so that they can.
Yep.
Without saying, you haven't said much, why aren't you talking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Crossing the line of
right.
that. How do you balance those two things?
I think, not to give a non-answer, but my non-answer is like that really depends on the team.
Yeah. Sure.
Like, that's also depends on the culture too.
Because
work cultures here vary, and then work cultures, if you're working internationally, extremely vary for very similar reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No answer.
No, it's hard.
It is. It's difficult. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, then let's change the subject
and
talk about receiving criticism.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Like how, like what's the... are there particular tools? Like, how do you when you're on the receiving end?
Yeah.
Let's maybe start. What's the worst way to react?
Oh, you're wrong. That would probably be bad.
I mean, maybe past the obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, you say that, but like grown-ass adults who like are being paid to be there, I've seen them do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or be like, you don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness, I can't stand that.
Yeah, I've seen people who are paid to be there just say like, no, you don't get it. We're doing it this way. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Right.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of this I can think of with respect to like playtesting a game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you get that kind of feedback. And to be clear, you know, you're putting a piece of yourself into this game. And so it's it can be difficult to receive feedback, especially hard feedback, and especially from people you don't necessarily know. I know we're talking about things internally with your company or what have you. But like, even outside of that, it can be really difficult to hear like, oh, this just isn't working out.
Yeah.
This thing I didn't like or whatever. And you felt really strongly about it. I think that like what I tend to do is I try to be like more clinical about like the feedback I've gotten.
Yeah.
Like I've gotten this feedback and this is a response to it. And I just have to take that as data and then process that data and then use that data as I feel necessary. I try not to react to it very much unless it's like literally impeding people's feedback process giving.
Sure.
So like if somebody is like, I don't like the way that this works. I'll be like, I hear you or something. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying, or I'll write it down so they know that I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
But like, I don't necessarily like, I won't like justify my decisions because they don't know all of the reasoning as to why I made it the decisions I did.
Yeah.
I think there are moments when you want to justify your decisions and it makes a lot more sense in an internal conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think that like, you don't always necessarily need to justify what you've done, even though that oftentimes feels like the instinct.
Right.
So, totally.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think going back to what you're saying, like you put your part of yourself into it.
Yeah.
I think the most important, like the most helpful thing for me personally in receiving feedback is trying to separate my sense of self from whatever my work is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lesson that this is why I think everyone should take figure drawing.
Sure.
Because like that's a harsh reality where everyone is going to get a piece of criticism. Like I still remember very vividly, I was taking a painting class in college and we had a big final project and I did this huge painting and I was very proud of it.
Yeah.
And the backdrop of a painting was like a picket fence,
like
a wooden fence. And during crit, my professor David was like, your fence is crooked. Like, that's bad. Like, your fence is not straight. The lines are crooked.
Yeah.
And immediately, I went into the wrong mode of, like, no, I wanted them to convey, like, trying to find out, like, no, it's supposed to, like, convey the uneasiness. And he's like, August. I'm like, okay, I fucked up the lines. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I think that felt, like, I remember that so well because it was very freeing of, like, oh, no, I made this mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm a good painter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both those things can be true. And being able to be in a place of hear criticism and be like, yeah, I did screw that up.
Yeah.
Like that way opens up a lot of possibility for like being able to actually like I could now paint that painting better because I would pay more attention to the lines. And every painting I did after that, I was a better painter for having received that feedback. And so just making sure you kind of separate your ego from it and say like they are only criticizing the work.
Yeah.
And I think talking about player feedback, this is one of the reasons that I try not to be online at all, is I think as a society, we've gotten really bad at this.
Yeah.
Where, like, the notion of lazy developers is terrible. But it's, like, they didn't, like, reuse this asset because, like, it wasn't a bad decision that developers made. They're lazy developers. They are bad developers.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, especially anonymized feedback, is innately personal.
Yes.
Of, like, this person should lose their job.
Right.
And I think that has, like, permeated down to all levels of, like, needing those guardrails up of, like, being able to defend myself and, like, justify my position here. Because, like, you're criticizing my art. I need to justify why I'm here and not just hear, like, hey, maybe I should make the head a little smaller.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's helpful. I think it's helpful to recognize when criticism is constructive.
Yes.
And when you are getting constructive criticism, there a person who is being genuine about it is coming from a place of trying to help you improve something that they felt isn't working.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, like, if you recognize that this person is trying to help you, provide you with some feedback to make you better, then it will be easier to take maybe harsher criticisms less personally because you realize that they're really just trying to help you out.
And I think this comes back kind of to something we were talking about before, where like constructive criticism isn't positive criticism.
Yeah.
Right.
Like that criticism from David, my painting teacher, was not positive in the slightest.
Right.
And it was the most constructive criticism I've received in my life. Mm. It was just, he's like, hey, it's bad. Just acknowledge that it's bad and we'll move on from this. Mm-hmm. And being able to like separate those.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some ways that you can start practicing separating yourself from your work or prepping yourself to be in a position where you will receive feedback and criticism, because you don't know if it's going to be constructive or not,
yep.
but in a healthier and more proactive way for yourself?
I think Stephen had a really good, just like kind of not bottle it up, but like give it some time to simmer, especially like a lot of times it's this weird unbalanced like relationship where someone might have like, I could play a build that Mark gives me and sit on it for days thinking of feedback, and then I give him feedback and now I'm expecting for him to reply to it instantly.
Right? Yeah.
Oh.
And like that's not equal.
Right.
So
right,
like
right.
being okay, I'm hearing what you're saying, I'm gonna think on it, I think is like the most helpful thing you can do, because also you want the person giving you criticism to feel like that labor is valuable.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that is also labor.
Right.
And so like being able to say like, I'm gonna think on it, that's a lot, like thank you for the criticism and that's a lot to think on. And then being able to come back later with a more well-formed thought, because I think, like I did in that painting class, the wrong thing to do is react instantly and like try to think of a way to justify it.
Yeah.
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 Oh, okay. I'll do the figure drawing. You've been hitting it on it for the whole episode.
Well, we've accomplished the goal of the program.
Yes. So
the whole thing was
wrap
just
it up.
Yep. The whole thing was just to get you to agree to this.
I just graduated, man. Why I got to take another class?
Because learning is forever.
Oh, yay.
I mean, maybe that is, I mean, it's a jokey way to sort of summarize, but it is kind of like, it's a bit of a drag to have to like, you know, you feel like I'm good at this work.
Mm-hmm.
I have relatively good taste, so I can give feedback and I can evaluate people's feedback.
Yes.
But there's still so much more to learn about like actually making that healthy.
Right.
Right. And like, that's a kind of a drag, right?
Yeah, totally.
But I mean, like anything, you got to practice and get good at it, right?
It
is part of your job, whether you're on a team or, I mean, if you're working just with some friends on like a hobby project, like you have you, it's probably the most desired because you don't have a framework to help you do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just sort of knowing how it works. Hopefully, folks have got some help.
Yeah.
And I want to hear in the Discord about experiences that listeners have had with this on teams of various sizes,
mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the things we've definitely learned from you, August, is that there just is no cookie cutter solution to this.
Yeah.
It's more of it's a bit of a philosophy and it's a lot of practice,
mm-hmm.
right? That's our show. For show notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Discuss this episode or others or whatever with your fellow listeners on Discord. Stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be looking at design investigations and exhibiting your game. But that's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.